Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus.
We're going to read the 14 verses at the beginning of chapter 15.
So 14 or 15?
The first 14 verses. Actually, we'll go down to 20. And there's five of us, so we'll read four apiece, Mark, if you'll start.
Then some Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem and said, "Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders, that they did not wash their hands when they eat bread?" And he answered and said to them, "Why do you yourselves transgress the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, 'Honor your father and mother,' and he who speaks evil of father or mother is to be put to death."
But you say, "Whoever says to his father or mother, 'Whatever I have that would help you has been given to God,' he is not to honor his father or his mother. And by this you invalidated the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites, rightly did Isaiah prophesy to you, 'But people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me.'
But in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines and precepts of men." After Jesus called the crowd to him, he said to them, "Hear and understand. It is not what enters the mouth that defiles the man, but what proceeds out of the mouth, this defiles the man." Then the disciples came and said to him, "Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when you heard this statement?"
But he answered and said, "Every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant shall be uprooted. Let them alone, they are like guides of the blind, and if a blind man guides the blind man, both will fall into a pit." Peter said to him, "Explain the parable to us." Jesus said, "Are you still lacking in understanding also?
Do you not understand that everything that goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and is eliminated? But the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and those defile the man. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanders. These are the things which defile the man. But to eat with unwashed hands doesn't defile the man." Lord, help us as we read this text and unpack it to learn what you have for us even tonight, even now, as we seek to live your life and the life you have for us in Yeshua's name. Well, there's some kind of clash going on, and Jesus is not afraid of it. I like that. I like that. When I was a hippie, I looked for that. I mean, I was so happy to see Jesus battling the big guns, and he took them on. And here's the crowd, here's his disciples, and here's these guys nicknamed Pharisees and scribes. Now, I didn't know who they were. I wasn't a first century scholar when I was 19 years old. I wouldn't call myself that now, but I would say I know a fair bit more than I did at 19. What I liked at 19 was that Jesus was teaching his own boys. He was not afraid of the crowd, and he really wasn't afraid, and in fact loved it, I think, taking on the Pharisees and scribes. And these sets of people who were often companions in opposition to him represented everything the good parts of the Jewish religion. They didn't represent the bad parts. Don't get a negative spin on these guys. These are the good Jews. These are the Jews that have a long tradition. Pharisees who are withdrawing, scribes who've been writing down the Bible since Ezra and who've been teaching the Bible, Pharisees who have lots of traditions that have been growing within it, and they're seeking to... They would have been like the Hasidic Jews today. You'd look at them if you were walking there with Jesus. You're walking down in Galilee Street. "I'm on Galilee Street, honey. I'll be home for dinner." And if you were walking down, "Oh, here comes some Pharisees. Here comes some scribes." You'd say, "They are kosher Jews. These guys represent our religion." Now, some of the people who opposed them, the Sadducees, the Essenes, the Herodians, the Zealots, didn't exactly think they represented. So just like in Judaisms today, there were Judaisms in those days, and the S is significant. However, to the populace, to the general folk out there, not to the Roman authorities, for whom the Sadducees were the representatives, to the general peoples out there, to the centurions and to the wandering nomads from Iraq, Pharisees and scribes, up, there goes a Jew. That's the Jew.
And yet the two didn't really get along, did they?
At times they did. At times they didn't. Mind you, scribes would have majored on, you'd think they'd major on the written word, but they majored on their teaching of the written word, which along with the Pharisees, their teaching of the written word or the oral law made them kind of cousins. Pharisees and scribes coming to Jesus. Now, a few weeks ago we looked at Nicodemus, who came to Jesus at nighttime. And last week we looked at the blind man whom Jesus approached, because the blind man wasn't going to approach him. Didn't have direction. But here the Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem. They're traveling north on one of the four main roads that get up there. And they say, they ask a question. Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? This doesn't sound like a sympathetic question. Say, how are things going? Or say, do you believe that Isaiah 53 is about the coming Messiah? I mean, they're not asking that kind of question. They're saying, how come you guys don't do what we guys do? Now, we know from other texts that perhaps these were representatives or couriers of the message from the main Pharisee or the main scribe, who sends emissaries, apostles if you will, to go and suss them out, detectives or reporters. We don't know exactly who these folks were, they're unnamed. Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? Which is kind of a push you against the ropes question, isn't it? It's not a sympathetic, let's have a coffee. How come you break the rules? And it's not our rules. Note how they say it. It's the tradition of the elders. You appeal immediately to history. You appeal immediately to those who are not there to defend themselves. And on whom we're supposed to have some kind of not just respect, but devotion, compliance, obedience. It's a trump card of the conversation. Well, how do we cop that? Because we cop it.
We had a man respond to the Be More Jewish website or track that we have today ring up. It's all about Judaism doesn't believe in Jesus. You can't be Jewish and believe in Jesus.
Judaism doesn't teach that.
Yeah,
and right. So you're coming up with something new. We Jews, we have a tradition.
Ask any Orthodox rabbi.
And there they are, right there, coming to visit Jesus, right there. Ask any recognizable Orthodox rabbi, not one of you upstarts. We have the tradition on which we're leaning. And we've been here for 1,500 years. I don't know who you are. And that's what they'd be saying, right? Moses, 1,500 years B.C. And it's the tradition of the elders. I mean, we cop it also when there's a... when they talk about the Holy Ghost. How dare you do this when our people went to the graves? Now, they're not there to defend themselves or to say, hey, look, I know something now that I wish they would have told me about. People post-Holocaust have a whole different view of life and death, I'm guessing, than they did on their way in. Tradition of the elders is a trump card by which you think, I'm closing this conversation and conquering. I don't care if you have the Ace of Diamonds. I've got the Two of Spades. For they don't wash their hands when they eat bread. Well, that's one of the traditions. Where did it come from?
What did we tell me? You always wash your hands before you eat.
I guess you're supposed to. They certainly were then. It's even more so today in the Orthodox world. You can go down to Gold's and buy a cup, a proper cup, to do hand washing. It has two handles. and you hold one with the other, and you pour it three times up to the wrist, and after you wash, and you think the prayer, because you can't say, well, after you say the prayer, you can't talk until you eat bread.
Why is that?
Sorry?
Why is that?
Why is that? Because of the tradition of the elders. Only it's a Nouveau tradition. That would not have been around at the time of Yeshua.
Yeah.
No, that's a growing thing. Religion keeps growing. Now, initially, what do you reckon that came from? One of two things. One Bible, one just smart.
You. James.
Well, that's it. So, there he said, yeah, the first reason that it originally was given was because people were dirty and washing their hands is smart. Get rid of germs, bacteria, all these things. So we know today what they probably would have intuitively understood. We now know it scientifically. But why else would people wash their hands? The priests. It was a giant labor, probably half the size of these double tables. That might be a little long. I don't know. Probably about two-thirds the size of this double table, made of mirrors, beautiful bronze, and made there in the tabernacle of Moses and Aaron. And the priest would always wash their hands. Later they washed their hands and their feet. Probably made it a little muddy, but it's called the laver.
We spoke about this the other week. Was it photographed? When the blonde man, did he go down to there?
No, that was the Pool of Siloam. That was an actual, almost river. But the laver was an actual piece of furniture that they carried with them in the tabernacle and later on put fully into the temple. It was mammon. And it would have been there, of course, to wash up after the sacrifices. After you kill the animals, you had to scrub up. So I'm guessing that this tradition came from both the sensibility of sanitation and the priestly sacrificial ceremonial cleansing. As a result of both of those traditions, it came into standard usage among the Pharisees and scribes that the tradition of the elders was to wash the hands.
It wasn't written down before this.
No. Nor was it written then. Talmud doesn't get written until 200 to 500 years later. Of course, that makes sense because it's oral law. How can you write oral law? So, don't eat bread before you wash your hands. Yeshua doesn't really answer them. He doesn't answer them.
He does the Jewish stuff. Answers a good question.
Well, he answers with a charge. I mean, look at, they come at him with their sword, and he says, he pulls it out and says, you call that a knife? Why do you yourselves, and the Greek is amplifying that because it's doubling the you, it's making sure it's like a reflexive, it's saying, you, I'm talking you, I'm not talking your elders, I'm talking you guys. You, Mr. Pharisee, Joey, and Fred, and Manasseh, sorry, and why do you, these guys right in front of me, you're not now the detective, you're now not the reporter. For somebody else. I'm talking to you. Why do you, Rochelle? Why do you, Gary? See? Why do you transgress the commandments of God? See, they come in with the trump card. We've got the two of spades here on your ace. We trumped you. We've got the, boy, look at us. We're really good. Or in your terms, we just took your queen. Julie's a chess player.
I'm not a little.
She took a little queen. So as a bishop. We took your bishop with that, and we feel really good, and we're 13 points ahead. And he says, you call that a move? And he takes your queen and your rook in the same move. You know? That's the kind of trump this was. And what does he do? He blames them for breaking another rule and inventing a tradition to do it. And what is it? It's this escape clause found in verses 5 and 6 that if you dedicate something to the temple, it's tax exempt or parent exempt. You know what honor in the Bible means? it says here in verse 4, honor your father and mother. And in verse 6, he is not to honor his father or his mother, thus you've been done. What does honor mean in that context?
Respect?
No, although it includes respect. Much more definitive. Much more measurable. Paying money. So here they came up with this elaborate system that said, if you dedicate things to the temple, or you say it's korban, it's dedicated, it's a gift that I've done it. Mr. and Mrs. Bob Mendelson today are giving 500 shekels to the temple. Well, now I've diminished my capacity to give to my parents and honor them, which means pay for them. And secondly, I've diminished my assessment. Capacity and assessment are both diminished. So there, I don't have to. And Yeshua says, you've just broken the Ten Commandments. You've broken big old number 4 or 5, depending on which list you go for. And you think your traditions about hands matter? You people got it so upside down. Traditions of elders are good. Tradition of God is numero uno.
So they've broken this tradition because they give money to the shul instead of to their mom and dad.
Yeah. And it's okay to give to the shul or the temple tax in this case or whatever it was that they dedicated. It's okay to do that, but you still are required to honor your parents. Which means pay for them. I always tell my kids this. This is an important lesson to tell your children. I'll tell you. You tell me.
You don't tell your parents, no?
My parents have passed away, but I believed it so much that I had to take care of them. And I got to tell you, there were times when I couldn't, but I had to. It didn't matter. I mean, you translate this to your own world. If your parents are failing, and you want to go tithe money to the church or synagogue, what's your number one place you got to give to? Mom and dad. That's what he's saying.
So the Hebrew commandment here, yeah, honor, is that tithe?
Well, the word.
What's the Hebrew word in the commandment?
Well, it's kavod, which can be translated in a number of ways. In Proverbs chapter 3, just keep your finger here and we'll flip back and see something that makes it really, I think, fairly clear.
I guess it's also that they seem to be using their giving to the temple as an excuse not to...
Well, that's it.
Not to.
It was a way of becoming deductible. You know? Mm-hmm. 458 is the page number in the Older Testament. Chapter 3 of the book of Proverbs. Don't forget God's teaching. Let kindness be around your neck. You'll find favor. Trust in the Lord. Don't be wise in your own eyes. Verse number 9 of chapter 3 of Proverbs, bottom right of page 458, says, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. How do you honor God from your wealth? This is money. I mean, that's pretty clear. And that's the same Hebrew word. Flip now to the Newer Testament, back towards in the Timothy section. So around page 160. Chapter 5 of 1 Timothy, verse number 3, so page 164, 1 Timothy 5, verse 3, honor widows who are widows indeed, But if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family. There it's not talking about send them notes. In verse 8, it's talking about providing for people. If anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his own household, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. And in verse 17 of that same chapter, which you just quoted, you were in too much of a hurry. Verse 17 says, the elders who rule well are to be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle the ox while he's threshing, and the laborer is worthy of his wages. So honor here is all about money. You can't give money to someone for whom you have no honor, or else it's just duty payments, and that's not good. But honor always included the notion of paying for it. That's an understanding that Yeshua had, that the Pharisees and scribes should have been maintaining. Does that make sense? You with me? I didn't run that too fast tonight.
Okay. Well, did you say something about tithing? You should take care of your parents before tithing?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I have no problem with that. In Haggai, there's a correction that some have misused. You've got lavish houses and the temple is in ruins. How dare you, God would be saying. But there it's about our decadence and not about our providing for our mother or father. So I know I've heard people talk about you ought to tithe before you even put the new paint job on your basement. But I don't think that's what it's talking about. It's not talking about that.
Well, taking care of your parents could be considered tithing. Or no?
No, it's not tithing. Tithing is particular to temple or to synagogue or church or something. It's about giving God his due. You don't want to be a ledger believer where you've got, I brought in $1,000, that means I'm supposed to give $100, not $101. Mm-hmm. Tithing becomes now a matter of moving a decimal, which it is, but there's also offerings. And generosity is the whole theme of God with all people and the theme of a believer. We're supposed to be generous. For God so loved the world that he gave. Giving is God's nature. And so I don't think we need to be decimal point people and too bean counting about this. No, I don't think it's part of tithing, but I think that in taking care of people, specifically those of our own household, we are wise.
I guess it also honors God, because if you were tithing and not taking care of your parents, people could look at you and go, this person is upholding the name of God and so on, but he's not even taking care of his parents.
Exactly what Paul wrote to Timothy, you're worse than an unbeliever. You don't take care of your own household. So that's what Jesus is saying here. You've got all these traditions, but you break the simple rule. The rule is honor your parents, and whoever speaks evil of father and mother is put to death. But you say, well, whatever I would have helped you, I've already korban, I've already given that to God. Thus you invalidate the word of God, which you really aren't doing, by the sake or for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites. Wow. Queen to Queen's Rook 2, Trump to Castle, get checkmate. I mean, this is power. I mean, he knocked them over. You hypocrite. This is not a way to get along with people. Of course, they didn't want to get along. They came with a knife, didn't they? He said, you call that knife. So, verse 7, you hypocrites, Isaiah prophesied about you. Wow. You think you're so good. I've got a Bible verse for you from Exodus, honor your parents, and now I've got one from Nevi'im, from Isaiah. Put it back here. This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me. How would you like that said of you? in vain do they worship me. In other words, whatever they do in worship is vanity. They're not going to church or synagogue or praying. They're not davening. They're not doing these things for God. They're doing it in vanity. A couple of weeks ago, we looked during Sukkot at Vanity of Vanities, at the book of Ecclesiastes. And it's vanity can mean all kinds of things, but bottom line, it means I'm doing things for me. So in vain, they worship me. That would be an indictment I'd never want to hear. Please, God, don't let me hear, hey, Bob, you worshiped me for nothing. In vain, for your sake, not for mine. And what's the difference? Their teaching is external, but what's mattering is what's going on internally. Their teaching, at the end of verse 9, as doctrines, the precepts of men. You came up with these traditions, these rules, these elders said that yada yada, whoop-de-doo. You're teaching as doctrines or dogmas or things to be practiced and believed. Your Talmud is of no matter to me, Yeshua would say. That is a striking, highly charged conversation. But why? Because their heart is far from God. There's an internal that's reflected in the external.
Wow. So even though at face value they're doing a good thing by living the way they work,
yeah,
it's still not good enough.
No, because it's not quantity. And it's not whether they trumpeted it or gave it privately. It doesn't matter. They were supposed to take care of mom and dad. And they were using, I mean, the excuse was out there. If you give, you will not have to give.
And you're not just giving it to him, you're giving it to God.
But yeah.
It's not good enough.
No.
Because God said, you're going to give it to you.
Yeah. What are you giving this to me for? I already told you what to do with it. Your mom and dad are hungry. I'm not hungry. And I'll say, yeah. How'd that sound? Could you hear this instead of you? Who are you in this story? Are you the hypocrites? Or are you standing there next to Jesus saying, give it to him?
What if there's somebody in need, but they won't work, or won't do profitable work, and it's a relative? Should you still feel compelled to honor them or look after them? A family member.
I appreciate this. I mean, everybody's got Uncle Joe in their family. Everybody's got an uncle somebody who's a real nebbish, who sits around and does bupkis.
Well, maybe not just a distant relative, but a close relative.
Okay.
But, yeah. You see, you don't want to lose their house or something.
Well, obviously, if they've got a house, they're not poor.
Well, their house is poor.
Okay. Well, reality bites. If they're not going to work and they've got to, and they can work, I mean, there's all kinds of principles that go on here. You don't want to enable people, that's such a modern word,
right,
to be lazy. You want to be careful on that psychological, sociological dysfunction of enablement. At the same time, it's a family man, you know, and you're going to be wacky to somebody someday, and they're going to say, well, let her. But you want somebody to give you ample opportunities for work. Probably better than money is opportunity. So if you can help Uncle Joe or Cousin Fred or whoever it is to, if you can call a few people and say, can you get a job for this guy? Is there something he can do? So that's actually better than just stooping them $500.
So when the kids are sort of rude at the table to mom and dad, this isn't the
verse to use.
The verse to use, is it?
How is it?
Good word.
I kind of thought so.
I thought it was.
It won't hurt.
If you get up, that's...
Well, there's different ways of honoring.
Well, it certainly includes respect. Yeah. You know, as I say, you can't just give money without respect. Here, take your lousy $50. It's got to be more than that. It's got to be heart, you know, honoring. The story of the child who's standing up in synagogue, and the mother says, sit down, Menachem, and he says, no, and he's, she says, sit down, okay, he sits down, he says, I'm sitting down, but I'm still standing up inside. Well, he's compliant and obedient, but he's not honoring, he's not submitting, if you will. He's dutiful, but he's not attitudinally right. And I guess this honor would include attitude as well as kesef. Mm-hmm. Kavod and kesef, it's both.
I need a pen.
I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just got it. Okay. So that we've got this section. We understand it because we're going to come back to it. Yeshua, verse 10, calls the crowd to him. He says, now listen to this. What goes into you is not going to make you dirty. That is a radical teaching. Radical. Because every, I mean, and it's consistent with the other things he said in the Sermon on the Mount and some other things about the gift and the altar and what sanctifies what. He's constantly pinging the bell of externals aren't going to do it for you. Don't worry about whether that V you're drinking or that Mount Franklin you're having is purifying, because that's not going to make you dirty. Oh, it might give you an upset stomach. In fact, he says everything goes in and gets eliminated. Verse 17, everything that goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and then goes out. It's a fairly straightforward, alimentary, my dear Watson. But verse 18, the things that come out of the mouth come from the heart, and that's where evil is. He's always registering his level of reality. Inside, far greater than outside. Wash your hands, don't wash your hands. Who cares? What really matters is your heart pure? Are you free from, look at verse 19, evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanders. You know, every one of these begins with something internal. Certainly evil thoughts. That's all I'm supposed to say. Murders. Do people generally murder people without thinking about it? They plot it. They plan it. They organize. They pay for it. You know, they do all kinds of adulteries. I don't know. Just walking down the street. And boom, I just fell into adultery. No, you plan it, you organize it. You know, it all starts in the head first. And it starts in the heart. Fornications, that's similar to adultery. Somebody, it's a different kind of person. Fornication, by the way, I think is the Greek word pornuo.
Oh, that's
pornography. Thefts. Thefts. I just was walking down the street and this $500 bill landed in my hand. You know the story of you know, Shabbos, you can't touch money. So the minister, the rabbi, and the priest are all together, and they all talk about this Chubb security van that they just heard about, and one guy said, yeah, I was praying for a miracle, and security thing opened up, and I was a little apologetic, and I turned back in most of it, and the minister said, oh, I did this. But the rabbi says, this was so unbelievable. I prayed, and Chubbs came by and opened the door, and this bag of money fell, a huge bag of money fell. And it was Saturday. But for 200 meters everywhere around, it was Thursday. pretty remarkable. I'll tell the story right next time. I'll remember it. But anyway, thefts start in the mind and start in the heart. And it comes from the inside. Yeshua is saying false witnesses, slanders, things that these boys are planning to do. You realize he's talking to them, the two who came, or the however many came. While Yeshua, though, is talking to the disciples. I kind of see them standing in the hallway behind. And Yeshua is teaching the boys, he's saying this. And from inside come thefts and false witnesses. I mean, that's what they've come to do, right? They've come to catch him out. Who knows what they're going to go back and report to Jerusalem. These are the things, verse 20, that defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hands, that's not going to defile you. Oh yeah, you might get sick. Oh yeah, you might catch a dreaded disease or something. And he's not saying, please, walk around and eat mud, like a little boy does. That is, like little boys do. Put them in front of them. And they'll eat it. They do. Girls, I don't think they ever do. Oh, boys do. That's not, he's not saying, go eat dirt. What he's saying is, you guys are majoring on the wrong side of things. You know what he said later in Matthew 23 about washing the inside of the cup before the outside of the cup? That's a steady theme in Matthew. The theme of get it right from the inside. Don't worry about whether you're supposed to daven at 7 a.m. or tithe 1.27%. It's not bean counting. It's not checklisting that's going to make you into a believer. It's turning your heart over to God. That's really what it is, isn't it? It's just saying, here I am. You wash me clean on the inside. And then the outside takes care of itself. He's not saying go eat a little pig. He's not saying that. But whenever in the Bible the teaching happens about kashrut, in the New Testament, it only happens two times. You know what happens next? The next scene? A Gentile. A Gentile rocks up. And he's teaching that it's the same that happened with Peter and the vision and the bacon double cheeseburgers that came out. You're not familiar with it. Right after that, Yeshua goes to Tyre and Sidon, Lebanon. He just goes north. And a Canaanite woman from that region comes out and says, have mercy on me, Lord, son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed. He didn't answer. His disciples said, send her away. She keeps shouting at us. He answered and said, hey, I was only sent to the Jewish people. She said, Lord, help me. And he said, well, it's not good to take the kid's bread, which is healing, the bread of the children, and throw it to the dogs. And dogs was a common term for Gentiles. You'll forgive me, Alvaro. In those days. But she said, in a very clever way, yeah, Lord, but even the dogs get the crumbs under the table. Yeshua said, woman, your faith is great. It's done for you as you wish. Her daughter was healed at once. The revelation of the Son of Man came to a Gentile and did as, Matthew records this in a very straightforward way, because when he teaches about food and cleanliness, more often than not, we start thinking, well, we're Jews, we keep kosher, they're Gentiles, they don't. We're Jews, we're this, they're Gentiles, they're that. And we segregate, and he's teaching, hey, it's for everybody. The inside wash, it's for everybody. You want to get clean, it's for Gentiles too. It's not just for us Jews. And you guys who come to assault me and knife me and trap me in false things, you're majoring on the outside, and you're going to be separate from the Gentiles. You're going to keep the Syrophoenician woman. The Canaanite woman, in another version, she's Syrophoenician. You'd keep her away, just like the disciples were. And Yeshua is welcoming. And although she had to jump through certain hoops. Yeah, she was a woman of faith. And faith is the way to have a clean heart. That's what he's saying. Not faith in the idea of faith, not faith in anything. I got this ridiculous email today, to which I responded. I never respond to these. But there was a long list of people who got this same email. I'll send it to you so you can see what I wrote. It was pretty good. Sometimes I write this. But this was, open this email, look at the rainbow. It was a rainbow. and send this to 10 people, and in 5 minutes you'll have a miracle tonight. Okay, I look at this and I think, you idiots. They're such good-hearted people who send this. They want to extend good things to people, but it's such a stupid idea. So I wrote about miracles and how little they happen in the Bible and how once in a while they do. And the greatest miracle of all, the resurrection of Jesus faith. And it's not faith in amulets or talismans like this rainbow image on a forwardable email. But it's faith in the one who died for us and rose from the dead. And if we put our faith in him, he'll cleanse us from the inside. And he'll keep us from false slanders, and he'll keep us from adulteries, and he'll keep us from evil thoughts. And he'll scrub us from the inside. That's good news, I think. We can still major on the externals. We'd miss out. Doesn't mean you shouldn't take care of the externals. You should still, you know, comb your hair, wash your hands. You should still do it, but get it in perspective. Get the majors major and the minors minor. And everything else seems to fit. Doesn't that make sense?